Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th, U.S. only. See store online for details.
Welcome to the Migration Podcast, your guide for waterfowl hunting tactics, gear, and conservation. And now, your host, Brian Hallblyde.
What is up, everybody? As Johnny M said, I am your host, Brian Hallblyde. I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to tune in to the Migration Waterfowl Podcast. Thank you so much. This episode is brought to you by the Duck Hole and Company. They are a full-service habitat company located in North Carolina. If you have questions about waterfowl habitat or need some work done on your property, get a hold of John over there and he will definitely get you squared away. This episode is also brought to you by Golden Millet, the premium duck planting. Easy to plant, easy to grow. Well, happy Friday, everyone. Hope you are doing well out there. I'm just relaxing in my game room / podcast studio. Enjoying a couple of fingers of Eagle Rare. It's probably my favorite Kentucky bourbon. Pretty fortunate this year to actually be able to find a few decent bourbons. I went on a deer hunt down in eastern Texas right before Christmas. Stopped at a liquor store there, and they had a giant display of Buffalo Trace and lots of Weller. And stuff is pretty difficult to find in my area. I don't know what it is about the state stores in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is kind of strange the way they handle their liquor sales. I get it from back in the day, the way that the state controlled everything. But it still goes on that way today, and they just can't keep the supply up like a lot of independent places do. Like I'm close to the Ohio line and the West Virginia line, so seems like we have a lot easier time finding different bourbons and things out there. And I know, you know, Buffalo Trace Distillery has caught fire, and you know it becomes very difficult to get. Those of you that are in any type of bourbon certainly know that, but it just seems like you go through stretches where you can't find anything from Buffalo Trace. But this year's it's been good. I guess they're getting caught up on production, and you know, a lot of their older vintage aged bourbons are coming around again. So really nice to have. I'm finishing up a bottle of Eagle Rare. I probably got one or two more pours out of it, and then I've got a full one here. I've got Weller, I got Buffalo Trace, I picked up that new Traveler, that's that blended whiskey from Buffalo Trace and their collab with Chris Stapleton, I believe. But just haven't had a chance to crack that one yet, but it's interesting and fun to be able to get your hands on some good stuff. And I'm not a huge drinker. Maybe twice a month if I get the hankering, I'll sit down. That's why a lot of these bourbons last me a long time, but I drink them. I've got friends that are so paranoid about not being able to find them that they don't even enjoy themselves. In fact, I brought quite a few bottles of Weller back from Texas, and I gave it to a buddy and for Christmas, and I asked him the other day, I said, how was that Weller? And he says, oh, I haven't even cracked it yet. I'm afraid to crack it, and I don't know when I'll find another one. And I said, man, just crack it open and enjoy it. It'll come around. We'll find more. And sure enough, he's a big car guy. He goes to car shows all over the tri-state area, PA, Ohio, West Virginia. He found a bunch of Weller in Ohio right after that. And I said, see, man, you could have been enjoying that Weller for the last couple of months. And just, you know, kind of a metaphor for life, you know. Don't hold on to stuff, you know, enjoy it. I see a lot of people, you know, make that mistake. I've always tried to do that. Now, of course, we all have different situations and different responsibilities. And, you know, I've got two daughters that are adults now, and I've always prioritized my family over everything else. However, I also prioritized living life to the fullest when I was able to. You know, I was pretty fortunate. God blessed me with a good job and a means to provide for my family at an early age. With that early age of getting a good career started, I was able to build up vacation time fairly quickly. And I've been very lucky to hunt all over the United States over the last 25 years, and a couple of provinces in Canada. So I say that because I run into some old timers now and again. you know, they're just getting ready to retire or they're in retirement and they're like, well, you know, when I get retired, I'm going to start doing all this stuff that I've always wanted to do. And then, you know, life gets in the way or health gets in the way. And it's sad to see they never get to go see those mountains out west or, you know, see those rivers flowing full of waterfowl in Montana, like I got to do. And, there's just so much to do out there. And again, I understand everybody's situation's different. Everybody's means are different, but whatever you can do, even if it's just getting in your car and driving a few hours to a new place that you haven't seen before, or getting together with that old friend that you haven't seen in a while, just don't let it pass you by. I mean, I don't want to turn this into a sermon about, you know, how to live your life, but I lost my dad back in 2014 to cancer, and he was only 64 years old, and he was a workaholic, mainly to provide for us and our family, and he was such a great father, such a great grandfather to my daughters, and it's just, he loved to work. I mean, that's what he loved to do, and I finally pried him away to go on a pheasant hunt out in South Dakota with me and my oldest daughter, and I'm looking at the picture here with the three of us crouched down with a pile of South Dakota pheasants, and that was the last hunt I was able to get him on before he passed away, and I'm so thankful that we were able to make that happen, because that's, I mean, I've got a lot of great memories of my dad. I wouldn't even be talking on this podcast about waterfowl hunting or hunting in general or anything outdoors if it wasn't for him. But, yeah, just take time to do that. Think about that. Make things happen that you can make happen. And I, like I said, I know everybody's situation is different, but if there's something that you've been wanting to do, make it happen. I mean, I'm going to be 50 years old in October this year, and it's like a blink of an eye. My oldest daughter's 22. She's going to be graduating college tomorrow. And I can remember like yesterday when she was born. I can remember like yesterday when I got married. It's just like we don't have the time that you think that we have. And that's not to be doom and gloom, because if you believe in Jesus and you have faith in God, you know that there's more after this life, and that's not my point. My point is trying to make the most of what you were given here on this earth. So anyway, this is what happens when you get into a little bit of bourbon, I guess, but I really appreciate you guys being here and listening to me and giving me this opportunity to talk with you and bring you some really great guests in the waterfowl world. Since we launched a couple of weeks ago, the waterfowl community has been really generous with their time and support. And I got to say, and I'm sure, you know, there's probably bad apples in every bushel, but it's a lot different than the white-tailed deer world that I've spent the last 25 years working in. A lot less egos, a lot less uncomfortableness, I guess, for lack of a better word. But, man, just have met some great people already so far. And that's the best part. You know, anytime I've been doing work for the outdoor industry, just the people that I would meet and go in different places and see in different parts of the country, and just probably the best part of it for sure. And hopefully I'll get to run into some of you someday and catch up a little bit. It's going to be a pretty cool journey, and I'm really enjoying cranking these episodes out for you. So thank you for taking the time to listen. So we'll get into today's episode. Branson and I are going to be talking with Jake Maxwell. Jake's the owner of Chasing Green YouTube channel and brand. He specializes in public land duck hunting from his home state of Arkansas, and he travels all the way up into Canada some years as well. Jake's been hunting waterfowl with his dad in Arkansas since he can remember. And we'll get into a little history of duck hunting in Arkansas and kind of what it's like growing up hunting there. We also discuss his hunting tactics in his area and also how he prepares for out-of-state hunts. And we'll get into his approaches for finding and scouting birds in other states and Canada. We also talk about the warming trend and the weather patterns, how it has affected the migration, and how he has adapted to continue to stay on the ducks as the traditional migration keeps changing. We also chat about water level knowledge, and this was super interesting to me. I've paid a little bit of attention to it over the years, but after talking to Jake, I'm really going to start jotting down and keeping track a lot better of the water levels and my observations at those different levels. And we're going to talk about how it affects duck behavior. Yeah, Jake's been hunting and paying attention to ducks for a long time. I think you're really going to enjoy this one. I know I did. I really enjoyed the conversation with him. And you will learn a lot from his decades of experience and knowledge for sure. So without further ado, let's jump into episode number 3. Welcome back to another episode of the Migration Waterfowl Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Hallbly. I'm joined by my co-host, Branson Peake. How's it going tonight, my friend?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Kind of crazy today in Southwest Pennsylvania. I think it got up to almost 80 degrees.
Yeah, up here got up to, like 79 degrees, and then a thunderstorm rolled through, and there's about almost golf ball size hail out there right now.
Yikes.
Yeah.
You guys get a lot of that flooding that we got down this way?
Oh, yeah, dude. You should see the rivers. Bridges are almost under and stuff. I just seen the picture. I forget what road it is down Pittsburgh, but it's completely underwater.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been bad.
But, yeah, I was sitting here, and I hear stuff tanging off the roof. I'm like, dude, what's going on? So I go downstairs and look outside, dude. My car is just getting pegged. I'm like, oh, are we serious?
Yeah.
So.
Well, we're here in April, but we're going to be talking some duck hunting, which is pretty awesome. So we got a special guest, Jake from Chasing Green YouTube channel. How's it going tonight, Jake?
Pretty good, man. Glad to be here to talk some ducks. Kind of starting to think about it again. So any chance I get to talk about it, it always helps the duck depression a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. We're not too terribly far away from the early teal seasons. They'll be coming up before we know it.
Right. Yeah, I'm ready. I'm after the turkeys right now. We open for turkey tomorrow. So excited to do that, but that's a short little thing, and then it'll be waiting on the teal.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, we can hunt turkeys in Ohio Saturday, and then Pennsylvania doesn't open for, I think, 2 more weeks. They're so late.
Yeah. 2 weeks. But, and they trimmed our season down this year, I think.
Yeah.
By the looks of the dates.
Yep. So I'm going to try to go over to Ohio on Saturday on one of my deer leases. We'll see if I can make it out there. It's my wife's birthday weekend, so we'll play that by ear. So anyway, Jake, give us a quick intro. Let people know who you are, where you're from, what you do.
Well, like you said, my name is Jake, and I run the YouTube channel Chasing Green. I'm also on Instagram, pretty much all the socials. And I pretty much am just a traveling public land duck hunter that films his hunts. Been duck hunting my entire life, pretty much. So the only difference now is I just carry a camera. And like this past season, I probably hit 6 states. So we cover a lot of ground. I'm from Arkansas. That's where I've done most of my hunting over my life. But recently I've started, we've started in Canada and worked all the way down to the Arkansas-Louisiana line this past season. So wherever I can get after a mallard is where I want to be. So that pretty much sums up Chasing Green. My content's a lot of hunting, but it's also a lot of educational stuff too, because myself and the people in my group, we've been doing a long time, and it's become really enjoyable to kind of pass that on. And so that's a big part of my channel too. A lot of educational stuff, just trying to help people become better hunters if we can, and entertain them while we do that.
Yeah, that's one thing I really like about your channel. You mix some good entertainment with the hunting footage, but it's not just sitting in a blind and repetitive footage of shooting ducks. You really dive deep into some conservation, some other things people don't think about, like the Branson was telling me about the water level, how to read that. A lot of people don't ever talk about that. Just some different things like that. It's just a great varied channel.
I appreciate that. Yeah, the water level thing's a veteran secret. Like the veteran guys, they've got notebooks full of what all the river levels need to be, and you know, they're constantly watching water gauges. But like you said, a lot of people don't talk about that stuff, and that's what I try to do. Try to talk about just the nitty gritty stuff. I mean, there's a lot of the basic stuff: how to blow a duck call, how to set a decoy spread. But you know, we really try to explain everything we're doing to have the success we have on public ground.
So how did you get into duck hunting? Do you have family members or friends get you into it?
Yeah. I mean, there, if you're from Arkansas, there's a good chance you're going to get into duck hunting. So it's such a huge part of the culture here. And my dad, you know, was a hardcore duck hunter too, hardcore public land hunter. So he had me duck hunting when I was like 2 years old. He was taking me out there, floating me on decoy bags. I mean, some of my earliest memories and pictures are duck hunting. Got a duck call for my first birthday. So I've basically been doing it my entire life. And that's just never slowed up. I mean, since the day I graduated high school, I've duck hunted every day of season for the most part. So I miss a few days here and there. I've duck hunted a little less now, actually, than I used to, which blows people's mind. But it's fun, man. There's nothing quite like it in the outdoor world.
So what was it like growing up duck hunting there? Like, has it always been, you know, crazy ducks everywhere? Or was there times where it was like, you know, it's dead this year, the next year, and then it picks, you know what I mean? Living in that major flyway.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely up years and down years, no doubt. I mean, especially back then, because I mean, Arkansas has went through so much change. Back then, we didn't, in the early 90s, late 90s, early 2000s, even like 2010s, we didn't have to travel as much. Our area started drying up, and that's why we had to leave. So we stuck to this one area, which was a huge mistake even back then. We would have been more successful back then if we had gathered more places to hunt and really put effort towards that. But it was just good enough, even during the down times, to keep you complacent, and you know, we would stick to the same areas. But yeah, you would, you know, dry years, wet years, hot, cold, you know, it would vary. But a lot of people I've learned, whether it be in duck hunting or anything else, look at the past with, like, you know, rose colored sunglasses. They only see the past as the golden years. And I mean, we kill way more ducks now than we did back then. But we travel a lot more. We're a lot better at it. There's a lot of factors, you know, but yeah, well, there was a lot of ducks in Arkansas. There always has been. Unfortunately, that's kind of started heading the other direction. I mean, we've definitely lost. I would have never left Arkansas. Would have never dreamed of it, you know, 15 years ago, but I seen it coming. I was on the southern tip. I could watch this happen over time. So I knew it was time to head north. And so, but yeah, growing up, I mean, there was tons and tons of birds. That's what really blows people's mind when they come there, just the sheer number of birds. And it's not necessarily birds you're specifically hunting, but just in the sky. You know, it's, I see still even today, there's more ducks in Arkansas than most states. It's just their behavior is different, and they're not necessarily huntable birds, but you still see skies full of them, you know?
Right. Was that Arkansas you drove through, Brian, that you sent that picture?
Yeah, so I was headed down to deer hunt in eastern Texas, probably an hour west of Corpus Christi, and we cut through Arkansas and stopped at Max Prairie Wings, and just the number of birds that I saw there were incredible. I mean, just seemed like every field, every pothole, every swamp we went by was just loaded with birds. That was like the week before Christmas. So a good bit of birds through that area.
Yeah, you sent me that picture. I was like, is it snowing?
All those snow geese, yeah.
Yeah. So that was pretty, I never seen nothing like that. I was like, what?
Yeah. Yeah, Jake, yeah. So do you think that that's because of the habitats changing or a lot of improvements on private land or global warming or all the above?
It's just a lot of different factors, but the number one factor, no doubt in my mind, is the weather. I mean, that's the number one driver of mallard movement, in my opinion, and from what I've seen. It's just getting harder and harder to move them each year. It's not about, you know, a 10-day cold stretch. You need a two-month average low number being low to move them. You know, hunting them in Canada and hunting them, you know, in the northern parts of the United States, you see just how they're able to survive unless it gets really cold. There's grain everywhere. The water stays open. Lakes aren't freezing over like they used to. There's no pressure to run them down. It's just the weather's changed. And I seen a report by an old DU scientist, I don't know, what, maybe 5 or 10 years ago. And he was talking about this, like kind of predicting it. He was saying by 2050, the southern line of mallards would be Nebraska by 2050. That was his prediction. And that's what I've seen. You know, honkers stopped migrating. They used to migrate to Arkansas, like, I guess the 80s, 70s. I'm not real sure when that quit, but they kind of stopped. Specs have changed their migration. They were really more Louisiana and Texas based. There wasn't a ton of specs when I was growing up. We'd kill one from time to time, but it was nothing like it is now. Now Arkansas is the spec capital of the world. Like, that just happened in the past 15 years, my lifetime. Mm. I watched it happen. So, you know, I'm watching all these changes, and it's definitely some habitats part of it. I mean, a lot of the good duck holes that or duck spots that I grew up knowing about that were kind of famous, a lot of them have been land leveled, laser leveled, and just turned into more farmland. Farmers are grabbing more and more. They're leaving less, either in moist soil stuff or CRP, and they're just taking every acre they can because it's harder to farm now. You can't blame them, but it's just we've lost a ton of habitat. The rice we used to have is not anywhere close. You know, they're able to pick or cut so much more of it nowadays than they were. The tractors are so much more efficient. So, I mean, you go out there now and they're tilling everything to get ready for spring in the fall. So, like, they're tilling the dirt under anyway in like October before the ducks even get there. So when you drive through a lot of the Arkansas Delta, it's like the surface of the moon. It's barren. There's nothing out there. And then, you know, these out-of-state guys that come wanting to lease a field and the farmer just throws water over dirt and you think you got an Arkansas field. Well,
wow.
If that duck's not thirsty or need of water, he's not coming where you're at.
Buddy. Sure. Like,
so it's sad. I hate what's happened, but it is what happened. And so we acted accordingly. We moved on. And that's part of duck hunting. If there's one thing I've learned about duck hunting is you better expect change. Other places are going to get better and other places are going to get worse. That's just how it rolls. And you can either adapt to it or you know, just be left behind pretty much. So we've tried to adapt. And I'm sure, you know, Arkansas will get better and better at figuring out how to bring some habitat back. But if the weather don't change, I don't think, you know, it's going to ever go back to the way it used to be.
Yeah.
For mallards, yeah. Anyway. Now, I'm talking about mallards here. Not so much teal and gadwall and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, and I said global warming kind of tongue-in-cheek because it's, you know, natural cycles of the climate. It gets warmer, it gets colder. Hopefully, you know, someday soon it'll transition back into that colder period and we'll see more consistent duck hunting in the areas that, like we historically did, for sure.
I hope so, but I don't know. I mean, it's definitely – we're on a warming trend. There's no doubt about it. I mean, I see it every year. It just seems to get worse, and – it's getting cold, but it's getting cold later. And one thing I've learned about a mallard, the later it is, the harder it is to move him. Like, if you get into January, it's almost impossible to move them. I mean, I've seen them hang back. We were hunting some this past January, and it was like negative 10 actual temps and negative 30, 40 wind chills, snowing. And I mean, they just hung right through it for 10 days to 2 weeks. They'll just wait. They'll wait it out. And it's just really hard to move them. If you're only getting those cold snaps, you know, January and February, like what we've been getting.
Now they seem to be, and you probably pay more attention to this than I have. They seem to be heading back to the breeding grounds at the same time. They're not really going back much later, right?
I don't know. I mean, I know we still see them in Arkansas at around the same times. You know, it's not uncommon to see mallards in March, even in April in Arkansas. So we've always seen them like that, and I still see them like that. So I don't know if they're going back any earlier. But I think they're really just hanging, like not a lot of them are short-stopping. They're never even coming to the state, period. You know, they come as far as they have to, and then some conditions may run them south just a little bit, but they'll be right back. I mean,
yeah,
with as soon as conditions make it available. So there's two kind of ducks that I've, you know, I'm not an expert on this, but just from what I've studied in my experience is you've got your calendar migrators, and they're going to, and even mallards are like this. Mallards are kind of broke up into two different groups. You've got calendar ducks that are going to migrate on the photo period, and they're coming no matter what. Like when the sun starts changing its deal, they're coming around the same time every year. But then you got a whole another group of mallards, which I would say is the majority, and I call them habitat mallards. They're going wherever habitat is best suitable for them. And that's determined sometimes by water conditions, by weather conditions, by food conditions. All those things come into play. Pressure, although I'd say pressure is the least that comes into play. But they're going to be where survival is best for them. And some years that may be North Dakota. Other years that may be Oklahoma. You just, you know, it's different every year, it seems.
Yeah. Well, you guys still seem to do pretty good this past season on the mallard. So what have you seen? Did you change your tactics up much this past season as opposed to previous seasons?
This was our best season. This was my best season ever this past season, out of like 30 years. So I wouldn't say we changed anything. I mean, we traveled a lot. We put a lot of miles in and worked really hard for them. We had a really good team of guys. That's tremendous. Just having a good group of people that everybody can scout, everybody knows what they're doing. That's building that team has really helped. Like the better your group gets, the better you're going to get. And so I've been working on that for years now. And I feel like this past year we had the perfect group of guys and the weather was just right. Just some years you're just blessed. We were blessed. Every decision we made seemed to be the right one. We would hit a spot at the perfect time, whether we just the stars would align. And, you know, I think it was more just right place, right time every time, because it seemed like every place we went, we would just be under the mother load. And that's just being blessed or being lucky. I mean, so that helped a lot.
Yeah, for sure. Do you have like a baseline of tactics that you kind of rely on no matter where you go, or is it changing up constantly?
Well, I would say finding them is probably the same everywhere. And then once you find them, it's, you know, can kind of vary depending on what's going on. One thing I've learned for sure. So I was hunting mallards in October this past year in Canada. And you think, oh, it's early in the season. These ducks are going to be easy to kill. What I've learned is if a duck has been living at a place for a long period of time, aka stale, he's going to be hard to kill no matter how much pressure's been on him and no matter how early in the season it is. Those October mallards in Canada were some of the hardest ducks I've ever hunted. And we hunted for 8 days and never seen another soul. There was nobody touching these ducks. It's just like their pattern is down. They've been there since they returned from the breeding grounds. So it's like they've been there for 3 or 4 months. They've flown from the same feed to the same, you know, roost to the same water. And it's, they know every little detail about where they're at. And if anything's out of place, for instance, if you go to a spot where there's been 5,000 and now you run them up and you hunt and you've only got 100 decoys out, well, when they come back, they're weary, man. And it was hard to hunt them up there. They were not responsive to the call at all. It was just shocking to me. And I've seen that play out in other places. So stale birds are the worst birds. It doesn't matter if it's September or if it's January. You need weather patterns to move them, put them in a new spot, change up, you know, throw them a curveball, basically, is what you need. But anyway, our tactics are basically the same. We come to an area. We've already did 90% of the homework on e-scouting. You know, we've mapped everything out that's possible. And then it's all about just following that route, following the places that you marked and not leaving any stone unturned and just covering as much ground as possible. And sometimes we have to, like, completely pull up stakes from where we wanted to be or where we thought we were going to be and drive 5 hours the other direction. But by the end of the next few days, we're going to be on them. If there's any ducks within a two-state area, you know, when we go on this, like, say, if we go on a trip, you know, we're, Lord willing, going to find them. And that's been kind of our pattern. And so it's all about just putting in the miles, really. And sometimes you get lucky and the first place you check's full of ducks. But a lot of times we have to work for it. And we have to go find them. And they're not the plan A, B, C, or D. They're plan K or, you know, W. And, you know, that's just part of it. And so once we find them, you know, the strategy is just like, then you start playing a game. You're playing the game with the chess match with the ducks. And it's all about figuring out what they want on that day. Typically, though, we like to start with big spreads if we can get away with it, which means wind. If it's windy, if it's going to move the decoys, we're going to go as many decoys as we can carry into that spot. We've just learned that bigger spreads work better for us. But we also have three or four callers that can kind of a little bit match that. You know, if I was just solo, I don't know if that would work as well. But we try to call. We love to call. All of us call a lot. That's how we like to do it. We like to hell call and get down on them. And there's some days that don't work, and that's when we struggle because we have to really back ourselves off, and that's hard. But, yeah, big spreads, lots of calling. I'd say 80% of the ducks we shoot are traffic birds. Maybe 20% we found some X. But a lot of times the X is on a refuge or a sanctuary. It's holding 100,000 birds. And then they fly off of it to go somewhere else. Well, we get under them with 200 or 300 decoys and a bunch of loud calling. And on the right condition days, you're going to pull enough to shoot your limit. And that's kind of our strategy a lot of times. We're just looking for ducks flying and something that looks pretty good underneath them. And if we can find that, we've tended to do pretty well.
So you said you did some traveling this past season and you went up to Canada. Was that with a guide or was that public land all you're doing? Or how did you guys go about it up there?
No, we don't do any guiding. We hunt probably 95% public. And I love hunting public. I wouldn't do it any other way. I'm not opposed to hunting private. If somebody invites me or, you know, we meet somebody or something wants to take us, that's fine. But I just live for the public land game. That's what I like. I like hunting wild ducks, and those ducks are wild. But no, in Canada, it was a mix. Getting permission up there is a lot easier than the States. We did get permission on some private. And we shot them on some public too. So it was a good mix.
All right. So like you're going out of state or whatever, what are some tips for public land hunting? Or, you know, if you're just getting into it and you don't know where to start or you have nobody to show you, you know what I mean? So what would be like your tips for that?
Oh, the first place someone needs to start is Onyx. I mean, that is a game changer. If you're going to travel, that is a must. It's changed everything. It's made everything so much easier. So what we basically do is kind of like a formula. We look at every place that's available to us. We're not worried about private. I used to get caught up in that. I'd kind of waste time looking at private and then maybe we could go get permission on it. Now we don't even pay attention to private. It's just a waste of time because you're just going to spend half your time getting turned down. It's better just to, in most states, I should say, there's some places where this is not true, but in most states, we're mapping out all the available public that we can hunt. We're pinning it. And then once we pinned it, we've studied it, we're then going to find out the best route to go look at it, the most efficient route. This guy may go look at these three over here, and this guy's going to look go look at these four, and we're going to cover every piece possible. And then, you know, that's we're usually going to find a few plans from that. So that's what I would say. You know, it always starts with e-scouting if you don't know what you got around you. We check state websites. They usually have a lot of information on as far as state ground. There's usually a lot of Corps ground in most states, Corps of Engineers, federal lands, which we don't really hunt federal much. But so, yeah, that's kind of, I'd say, the first place to start is find out what's available to you and then go scout it. Go put boots on the ground. And don't leave any stone unturned. I'm telling you, if you go check nine, they're going to be on the 10th one that you don't feel like going to.
Yeah.
That's just how it is.
For sure.
Another thing I've learned in duck hunting is convenience is normally the enemy of duck hunting success. If you choose the 15-minute drive, you should have took the 2-hour drive. It just I don't know why it works that way, but anytime we try to do the stuff the easy way, we strike out. And then when we go do that hard thing we didn't want to is when it pans out.
So how are you kind of breaking down the timeline of where you want to be at what times of the season? Are you kind of following migration reports or relying on people that you know in the area?
A lot of places we go, we don't know anybody. Like this past year, I mean, we only really knew people in two of those states. So, no, I mean, I get to hunt a lot, thankfully, and a lot of my friends do too. So we can kind of play it by ear and kind of watch the weather. And then we can look at the weather and kind of make an educated guess of where we need to start. And sometimes we pre-plan, like we pre-plan the Canada trip. We said, let's go up there early, you know, October before most things have opened. And then we may pre-plan a few others, but mostly it's like, hey, the weather's looking good. Let's go here next week. And that's the number one thing, being at the right place, the right time. You need to be where the weather's put them. I try to avoid planning, which I know guys with jobs that have to, you know, take vacation, that's hard to do. But it seems like anytime you write something down as far as planning way out in advance, it's going to be the worst weather conditions when that time gets there.
Right.
Stuff's going to be crazy. And you should have been there the week after you were there. That kind of happened to us in Canada this year. We were still successful, but we were getting pictures from guys up there that just mopped on the week after we left because the weather got perfect. But that's just part of it.
So minus the Onyx, is there any other tools or apps or anything that you utilize to help you?
There's some others out there that I've started to look into. I hadn't even looked into them enough to know anything about them yet, but we use Google Earth a lot. Google Earth provides a little bit cleaner picture a lot of times, so we're kind of bouncing between those two. I'll compare the two, and Onyx really just got an awesome feature, which is recent imagery. You can look at stuff that's been taken within the past month. Now, it's not very detailed, but you usually can at least see what the water's doing, you know, if it's high or low, and that's super helpful. But yeah, I mean, I'd say Google Earth and Onyx are the top two things we use.
Okay, so to study like this water stuff, you know, the water level, the temps, stuff like that, is there an app out there you can use for that, or is there a way of going about it to learn how to do that?
To like look at water levels on a river or something?
Yeah. So
well, Onyx actually has that built in as well. They normally have, it's a little icon. A lot of people don't even know they do this, but if there's like a river where you're looking, it'll be a little small icon. You can click that and it take you to the, I forget the name that handles the water. It's like the Army Corps of Water or something. Anyway, there's a website, you know, for lakes and stuff, we'll check the Corps. They have a lot of rivers. There's another website, the one I'm trying to think of, that has a lot of the other, you know, rivers. But yeah, we'll usually just type in whatever we're looking for and type water level with it on Google, and that's how we look at it. Now, as far as keeping up with the what you need to know, that just comes from experience. So like 5 years ago, I was there. The water level was this. We absolutely wrecked them. I'm about to write that down. I actually pinned that in my Onyx. So some of my pins are water pins. I put a pin on where we were hunting, and then I take a screenshot of what the water level was when we were hunting. And then I'm keeping up with that. And I also do it for the opposite end of the spectrum. So if I was there 3 years ago and the water was super low, I know it's unhuntable when the river's at this level. So I kind of keep up with all that. It's important. That's really the only way to do it, to my knowledge, is just to keep a detailed journal. I like to do it in Onyx, but you can do it however you want. Just keep up with the water levels. Every time you go, write little notes about it. And after, that's what a lot of guys don't get, man. This is like investing. It's a long-term game. You're going to have some success early, but your real success is going to become after you've learned a place for 5 years, 10 years. The longer you spend on it, the better you're going to get. There's some places I've been hunting my whole life. I can look at the water level like a river gauge, and I know exactly what the water's doing out there because I've been out there in so many different situations. I know what the ducks are doing. I know what they're going to do on each stage. And that just comes from spending a lot of time in the area. But you have to kind of, like I said, it's like investing. You have to, each day you're out there, you're building blocks for the future. And that's the way you got to look at it.
Yeah, that water level knowledge video you put out, it was fascinating, talking about how some of those ducks just know when the water's going to change, you know, 100 to 500 miles away, and they're just moving along, staying ahead of that. And
yeah,
just really crazy.
It's mind blowing, dude. I mean, they've tracked them. You know, they'll fly to a rain event that's happened 300 or 400 miles. It doesn't even have to be south. Sometimes it's east, sometimes it's north, and they'll go directly to that water. And we've seen it 1,000 times. You know, there'll be no ducks anywhere in this particular area, and it floods. And by daylight the next morning, they're there. I mean, they found it overnight. And it's just crazy how they can do that. And I've seen it happen time and time again. And that's a huge, huge tip for guys, man. If you can know where some food sources are at and be waiting on them to flood, and you be one of the first guys in there, I mean, that's one of the best ways to have a hunt of a lifetime. Get on a fresh flood, because the ducks are coming to that fresh food. And it's been a surefire way for us for years.
Excellent. So once you find your spots on Onyx and you kind of have your places picked out, you're going to go, are you guys just kind of loading up the truck and being ready for everything with all your, you know, just a variety of equipment?
As much as we can. Yeah. We pack everything that we can. I mean, none of us like hunting dry fields. Now, I know a lot of people do. I've got nothing against it. I just prefer to see ducks over water. So we carry some dry field stuff, but we're mainly loaded for water. And that's kind of what we do. We just pack as much as we can carry. And now we're also hunting public. So a lot of the times we can't really pull up to the hole. So we are also having to take into consideration what can we carry. So, you know, on our backs. And so, you know, we usually have as many floaters as we can, and then some form of land decoy, you know, if we're hunting near shoreline or in shallow water, whether it be silos or shells or something like that, that's light and you can carry a bunch of them. That's been super helpful.
Excellent. I wanted to ask you about the waders you guys have been using. I'm still stuck in the Stone Age with the neoprene. Can you walk us through the new technology and the kind of waders you're using now?
Yeah, I mean, we've been using breathables for years, which neoprene still have their place. They're tough, and if you're standing in cold, deep water, they're better. They're a better option. Like, if you're going to be in waist deep to belly button deep water all morning, you don't want breathables if it's going to be cold. But yeah, breathables, if you walk or if you are just very active while you're duck hunting, breathables are 10 times more comfortable and way more light. They're just the way to go, in my opinion. And now we've started wearing recently the zipper ones, and that was an even bigger game changer. I never thought that I would need that or even want it until I wore them. And I was like, oh yeah, never going back to not having the zipper. So Yeah, we've been with, I've been with High and Dry 4 or 5 years now. And I was fed up with waiters, man. I mean, we couldn't get on the last 30 days. We walked so much.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're walking in them, you're just wearing the seams out. You're moving your legs constantly. It's just constantly stressing the seams. And I mean, we just, we struggled to find good waiters. But High and Dry did really well for us. So we've enjoyed everything about them. They're tough as nails. I've never poked a hole in them and all the ground and miles I cover. Now, I've like just over time wore through them, but not like something poked through the breathable material, like a stick or something. And so I've been very happy with them.
Excellent. Well, I wanted to jump into some rapid fire questions for you, if you're ready.
Sure. Yeah, shoot.
All right. This, I probably know the answer to this one. What's your favorite waterfowl species?
Oh, mallards for sure.
How about your favorite waterfowl recipe?
Oh, now you're getting into tough ones. wow. There's actually, it's hard to explain, but it's basically duck kebabs with pineapple. If anybody out there has heard of Surviving Duck Season, he's a YouTuber. YouTube Surviving Duck Season duck kebabs, that recipe, that is the best recipe I've ever done. It's important that you follow it like he says, but man, I can eat pounds of duck when it's cooked like that. It's so good. It's a sweet type deal.
Yeah, that's Joel's channel, right?
Yeah, Joel Strickland. Yeah, yep, he's a good friend of mine. He's a good cook, but he turned me on to that. I actually ate them with him. Oh, I've been on that ever since. I was like, dude, this is the best duck I've ever eaten. I've been eating it for years. So
definitely got to try that. What's your favorite shotgun?
Huh? I've got a tough relationship going on with shotguns right now. So I'm going to not answer that at the moment. I was trying to find a good budget gun, and I just hunt too much. I think if you hunt 20, 30, 40 days a year, there's plenty of guns out there that last you. A lot of the guns that I've shot, but I think I'm going to have to go to Benelli. I'm just going to try it. I'm going to have to break down and try it. I was trying to get by with these budget semis, and it's just one problem after another. I mean, I'm frustrated with shotguns right now. If Benelli don't work, I'm getting a $300 pump. I promise you. That's going to be my next move.
So if you had to pick one, are you taking lakes, swamps, or rivers?
Man, you're coming with the hard questions. Probably small rivers.
Okay.
I don't know. Yeah, we'll go with that. That's tough.
How many decoys are you putting out on an average hunt?
60 to 100. When I got my buddies, when I'm by myself, 20.
Okay. You like to go by boat, kayak, or walk-in?
Well, I like to go by boat, but since none of us have one, walk-in. Chasing Greens is taking donations, by the way, if anybody has one they're tired of.
There you go.
Tax deductible.
Yes, sir. Well, I really appreciate your time. I want to give you a chance to let everybody know where they can find you and how to follow you.
Sure. Yeah. You can just find me on YouTube, Chasing Green. You can find me on Instagram @_ChasingGreen_. Same thing with Facebook. Give it a look. I think there's something there for everybody. There's gear reviews, educational stuff, duck tips, lots of good duck hunts. So if you're into that, give it a look and check us out.
Absolutely. Yeah, I really appreciate how you incorporate your faith and you find a nice way to glorify God in all your productions. And that's something that I'm hoping to mimic, because I'm always looking for ways to be thankful and give back to the Lord, because he's been so good with our blessings. And I just appreciate the way that you frame that for all your episodes.
I appreciate that. Yeah, that's a huge part, man. I mean, that's one of the main reasons why I do YouTube. I mean, it's how else am I going to reach or have thousands of people to speak to? And so that's a big part of it. Just I ran real hard in the opposite direction for a long time. And when I come to know Christ, I've tried to run real hard in his direction. And, you know, we try to glorify him in all we do. It's hard to duck hunt. It's hard to look at a mallard duck doing his thing and not see God. It is hard to do.
Absolutely.
You got to be trying to not see it, in my opinion.
For sure.
Even before I believed in Christ, I believed in something. I believe something made this. And the same thing when a turkey gobbles. When I watch a turkey gobble, it's like, this didn't happen by accident. And I've met very few hunters that are atheists. It's hard to get out in nature and not see God. So
yeah,
I try to point people to that the best I can. And we're not perfect by any means, but we try to.
No, sir.
Try to point to the one who is. So
absolutely. So what's the next big thing coming up for this year? You got any stuff out of the ordinary you're going to be tackling?
We really don't know. We're hoping to go back to Canada. We've got a short window where we're kind of don't have a ton of responsibilities. We're still young enough to do the pole lane thing. So we're just trying to honestly kick as much tail as we can right now. Cause I know as I get older, it's going to get tougher and, you know, duck hunting buddies come and go as responsibilities grow. And
absolutely.
So we're just enjoying it right now. We're trying to travel as much as we can and just duck hunt as much as we can and make relationships, man. That's one of the best parts, just getting to meet all these people and just form relationships all over the country. It's a lot of fun. And so we're just looking to do more of that. And we try not to plan too much. Like I said, we're going to look at what the weather conditions do, what gets rain over the off season, and then we're going to kind of plan where the ducks ought to be. And hopefully we can spend some time in those areas.
Well, we really appreciate your time. Branson, before I shut this down, did you have any follow-ups on anything?
No, I think I'm good. He answered everything I needed.
All right. Well, thanks again, Jake. We appreciate you coming on, and hopefully we'll be catching up with you soon.
All right. Appreciate it, man. Enjoy it, guys.
Well, that's going to be it for episode number 3. Thank you all so much for taking time out of your day to tune in. We really appreciate it. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at Migration Waterfowl. You can find links to our store on our Facebook and Instagram pages. Check out our shirts, hoodies, hats, thermoses, and coffee over there. And now, through the end of May, 10% of everything we sell will go to Ducks Unlimited. If you like what you've heard here, please take a moment and leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Get out there and enjoy the outdoors, but make sure you seek out a relationship with the one who created everything. Isaiah chapter 40, verse 31 says, "But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint." And remember, the migration is coming. Be ready when it arrives. Tune in next week to hear another great guest on the Migration Waterfowl Podcast.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.